Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Welcome to Forward Thinking, everybody. It's time for another podcast. My name is Jonathan Strickland, and I am joined by...
Lauren Vogelbaum, who is shaking her head at you.
And Joe McCormick, who... I made some horrible noise when you... Never mind.
Right. Well, you know, I make a time joke. They both groan because we are talking about time today. And we're talking about time and relativity and sort of the challenges that we're going to have in keeping time in the future. And you might think, well, you know, I thought we got pretty good at keeping time by now. I mean, we've got a long history of keeping time, centuries of keeping time. And it's true. We have gotten very good at keeping local time. Particularly things like, making sure that our seconds match up every single second of the day. Like, for instance, our quantum clock, which is keeping time so accurately that it won't lose a second for 3.7 billion years.
Yeah, as opposed to the old standard, which is 1 second every 100 million years, which is just, you know.
Yeah, it's unacceptable.
Unacceptable. We can't live like that.
Right. But so from a local perspective... we are very good at keeping time, but that local perspective is all based on the fact that we're all pretty much stuck here on this big old rock we call the Earth, traveling around the sun together, more or less moving at the same speed, although depending upon where you are on Earth, that actually changes just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that time is not something that's universally standard, right, Joe?
What?
I didn't know this was news to you. You wrote a whole episode of Forward Thinking about time. You don't remember that?
No.
Maybe it was in the future. Anyway, time is not standard.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, all right.
So you're telling me...
Yeah.
You're telling me what? That time is not a real thing? What about all of the physical laws we think of that are based on time? Like, light takes this long to cross this amount of distance.
All right, so time is relative, Joe. Time is relative depending upon a few things like gravity or mass or the speed at which you travel. And for us, for human beings, time is a very subjective experience where we experience time the way most of us are familiar. You know, a second takes a second. A minute is 60 seconds. An hour is 60 minutes.
Unless you're sitting in a doctor's office or, you know, attending a really boring lecture, in which case a second is much longer than that.
Or you're having fun, in which case a second is much smaller. That kind of course, goes back to the subjective part. But
well, I mean, we don't even know how long a second takes for somebody else, right? I mean,
sure.
I know what a second feels like to me. What if your second feels a lot longer than mine does?
Okay, yeah. And what if the color blue looks different to you than it does to me? That's beside the point here, Joe. What I'm trying to get at is that depending upon how fast you, Joe, are traveling, time will pass at a different rate for you than it would for someone who is not traveling at that same speed. This gets really complicated because we're technically all traveling already. We're on a planet that is moving. That planet is not stationary. Now, if we had gone back to pre-Copernican times, where we all had just assumed the Earth is a fixed location that is static and is not moving, and if that were in fact true, time would be a pretty simple thing for us to keep track of. But it's not true. We are on a planet that's moving around, and that is part of what determines how time passes for us.
Yeah.
Now, if you, Joe, were to get into, say, I don't know, a spaceship that has a really fast propulsion system on it, like close to the speed of light, and you were to just do a quick joyride around the solar system and come back, for argument's sake, we'll say that you spent 1 hour according to your experience. Your watch says 1 hour has passed, and you land back on Earth. Now, you were to compare your watch with my watch, which we had synchronized before you got in that spaceship, you would see that more time had passed on my watch than on your watch.
That's true, isn't it? Yeah, so I actually did a little research on this.
Oh, Joe, you were pulling my leg earlier.
I'm sorry, I was faking it. I'm not that... Well, okay. I'm pretty misinformed. But So I say, what if you start watching a movie when you get on your spaceship,
okay,
and then somebody back on Earth starts watching a movie at the same time? How much time do you have to finish a movie if, say, you're going at 90% of the speed of light? Now, I looked up the Lorentz transformation ratio on this, and it says if you're going about 90% of the speed of light, the transformation effect is at a ratio of, I think, like, it was 2.29.
Mm-hmm.
And that works out that the person on the ship who leaves in time to watch a movie, comes back when it's over, has time to watch The Little Mermaid.
Okay.
Back on Earth, at the same time that the Little Mermaid viewer arrives home, you have just finished watching The Godfather Part II.
Gotcha.
200 minutes long, the full thing, the sadness at the end.
So you get some Pacino and De Niro while the other person's singing Part of Your World.
Right.
Right. So the person on the spaceship, it feels like only 90 minutes have passed. The person on Earth, it's much longer.
Or 90 minutes only have passed for the person on the
spaceship. That's true. That's true.
It doesn't feel like it, but
right.
It is.
Yeah, because that's the way time works.
Subjective.
Again,
it's a subjective experience.
That's the thing. It's subjective in the sense that it feels normal for everybody,
right? Right,
right. You on the spaceship, it doesn't feel to you like your time is going any slower.
Right.
Everything seems totally normal. Your watch, the second hand takes a second to tick. The movie looks like it's playing at a regular speed. But if somehow the people on the Earth were able to peer in the window of your spaceship, obviously they wouldn't be able to. But if we could just imagine that, it would seem to them like you were watching the movie in slow motion.
Right, and that everything was going in slow motion. Not just you watching the movie, but your watch. The second hand would be ticking away at a slower rate than it should from that other observer. This is also tricky because we often talk about from a stationary observer. Well, we don't really have any stationary observers because, we're on a planet. The planet's moving.
It's a giant spaceship, essentially.
Isn't it even like just theoretically a rule that there's no such thing as a stationary observer?
I think you can sort of
posit one, but there's no way of actually confirming that you are stationary.
You're technically in a universe that's expanding. So, I mean, it's a complicated thing, right? Because if you are part of whatever system you are in, then you are moving, mm-hmm. right? So that this gets to be a mind bender. And you might think, oh, well, this is kind of crazy. We're talking about near speed of light travel. We have to contend with this right now. There are satellites in orbit. They're in geosynchronous orbit over the Earth that are keeping track of things like your GPS stuff, which isn't necessarily geosynchronous orbit. But you've got satellites up there that are sending down information, and our GPS systems, which I'm sorry, I just said GPS system. I'll have to go to the ATM machine and use my PIN number. But let's say you've got a GPS and it's getting information. It's technically getting information from multiple satellites. And that information includes when the satellite sent down a packet of information. And by using this data, the GPS can determine where you are on the surface of the Earth. It triangulates all that data. And it's all one of the important things in that is, when was the data sent by the satellite?
It's super time sensitive.
Right, exactly. Because that's what determines where how it figures out where you are on mm-hmm. the surface of the Earth.
So those seconds matter.
Right. And the thing is, those satellites that are in orbit are tracking time to us, it seems like, at a different rate, because their clocks over the course of a good span of time start to lose time.
And due to the distance from the center of gravity of the Earth.
Yeah, they're
and
moving
due to
faster.
The speed at which they're moving. Right.
To be fair, that change is so tiny.
It is tiny.
Like if we were just to be aboard this satellite or something, we wouldn't even notice it. We're talking about tiny, tiny fractions of a second. Now, it matters if you're doing really precise calculations, like I assume the kind that a GPS would
that
have
matters.
To do.
Sure, sure.
But at those kinds of speeds, it doesn't become a really noticeable problem the same way it was when we talked about watching The Godfather.
Right. That's much more. It's like an instant realization, whereas with the satellite, it's an accumulative thing as well. It would take months before people would even start to notice that something's hinky here. I know that we synchronize them and they're all atomic clocks. Why is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to contend with that macro dilation reality too, don't we? I mean, if we're talking about the future and we're talking about expanding into space, I mean, assuming we really are going to explore the cosmos.
Right.
Which, I'm going to. I don't know about the rest of humanity, so that yeah. everyone else better catch up.
Lauren's like, see ya.
I mean,
call her Major Tom from
suckas.
Now on.
I'm out.
Right. But yeah, if we want to do that, I mean, for instance, if we want to try and find another planet to colonize, most of the planets that would be even remotely possible for that are hundreds of light years away.
Yeah, I mean the nearest systems, period, are hundreds of light years away.
Alpha Centauri's two.
It's only two, sure.
But,
yeah,
you know, if you're talking...
I was thinking of Kepler 22b, you know, that one. Uh-huh. That was the one that the Kepler found, and they were like, oh, this one looks pretty cool.
Yeah, like 600 light years away.
Yeah, 600 light years away. That's light years. I mean, technically, according to relativity, you cannot travel at that speed.
Right.
You can't go at light speed. The closest we could hope to do if we accept the universal speed limit of light speed is getting, you know, close to light speed. Like we were talking about earlier, it's possible maybe we could someday get a craft that goes 90% of the speed of light. And then traveling to these places becomes a lot more feasible.
Right. But you're still talking about the descendants of the people who got on board the ship are the ones who are there.
Or some kind of cryogenic sort of shenanigans.
Or we managed to find some way of turning off the aging gene, and so we're perpetually the same age as whenever we got that treatment done. I wish that they would hurry up with that, because my time is running out, people.
I've heard you're very old, Jonathan.
That's what I hear.
Lauren, I don't trust the cryogenic freezing, by the way, because every time you do that, Mother wakes you up halfway there, and there's some beacon you've got to go check out on some weird blasted rock in the middle of space.
This kind of brings me to mind of another beloved science fiction franchise, and I'm talking specifically about Star Trek, where they've established the idea of the star date. Star date is essentially, I guess they do it in quadrants in Star Trek, but they have an established time that everyone can magically work on, and that way when you refer to a star date, everyone else that you encounter knows exactly when what time you're talking about, because they're all keeping that same star date somehow.
Right. I can only assume that they either have a computer on some planet, probably Earth, because Earth is clearly the center of the entire universe, or something else that is keeping time and is so technologically advancedly that it seems like magic to us, transmitting that signal simultaneously to every clock in the rest of the universe, or I don't know, that the quantum logic has advanced to a state that the computers can handle the logarithms.
Maybe they've got the entangled electrons, and the spin of the electron tells the onboard ship clock. Okay, yeah, ship time, because you would have to have ship time. Ship time would be what it would feel like to the people who are on board the ship, right? Mm-hmm. And that time would feel like just like on any other surface, that a second is a second, a minute is a minute, etc. The star date is supposed to be outside of that. It's supposed to be this universal time. And again, I agree. I think it's probably something that's supposed to be set on Earth, because Starfleet is where Earth is. And I can't believe we're having this discussion this in depth. But
they didn't even keep it consistent on the show.
No. The early days, they just had it as shorthand. You know, back before, like the first, if you watch the original series, and you watch those first few episodes, they aren't consistent. In fact, there are later episodes that have earlier star dates because they were just kind of, they thought it sounded cool.
They were just spitting out numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
They were like number 47, 47, 47, et cetera.
Right. Yeah,
and
could
numbers,
have been
yeah. Yeah, that is a cool number.
Yeah.
In the Star Trek universe, 47 is pretty big.
But anyway, that's the thing, is that you would have to have some sort of really complex computer to be able to take in that information and take your onboard ship's clock and... It was just ridiculous.
Wait a second. Let's break this down.
Okay.
Let's talk about what's really the problem here. Okay, now in Star Trek, they're going faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, they're warp speed.
Yeah, so let's just, maybe that's possible, you know, maybe everything we know is wrong, but let's just say right now that's not actually what we're going to be doing.
Okay, fair enough.
We're just going to ignore Tesseracts entirely. Yeah. Just skip over that. That's cool.
Let's imagine that we can go 90% the speed of light.
Okay.
Like we were talking about before. Break it down. What's the actual problem? Why can't we keep clocks synchronized?
Well, because, again, time is from a stationary observer, which, again...
From the observer down here, time is literally moving differently. You know, it's all the theory of relativity by Einstein. It says that time is part of the fabric of space, and that the fabric of space-time is warped by both gravity and speed.
Yeah,
and so you are changing, you are intrinsically changing the nature of this imaginary thing.
You're changing your experience.
It sounds like
essentially what we're saying is that time is an experience.
Yeah,
it's not something that you can track in any kind of standard or universal way.
It's also a magazine.
Yeah.
I just didn't want you to pigeonhole
yourself. It's also a print side project, isn't
it? That's true, yeah. Morris Day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's Joe and I are bonding over terrible references. Yeah, I mean, it's totally subjective. And really, the to me, one of the interesting things is that from the perspective of any one individual, you know, whether that person is aboard a spaceship or on a planet or drifting out into the dark, cold clutches of space itself, time is passing at a very at that normal rate. Normal being like this is what I'm used to.
To that person,
it's not until you meet up with someone else who has been traveling at a different speed and you compare notes that you even have the moment where you're like, "Wow,
okay.
that's
yeah.
weird."
So maybe we would just have to give up the fact that okay, if you're traveling at a very significant fraction of the speed of light, everything's going to get messed up. Well, actually, no matter how fast you're traveling, right? It's going to get messed up a little bit.
Right. It's just a question of the faster you travel, the more messed up it gets.
Right. Mm-hmm. In an exponential way.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So we understand that the traveling in these spaceships at a near fraction of the speed of light will make keeping track of time across distances completely pointless. You just can't really do it.
Right.
Maybe you could, I'd imagine, have different sort of galactic time zones, right? Like each planet keeps its own time, or
sure.
each solar
system
even keeps its own time in a way that is useful locally.
Yes.
And when you get somewhere new, you just have to adapt to their time. But that introduces another idea to me. So if we're traveling beyond Earth, aren't we going to get messed up real bad? Just our bodies, our brains. I mean, we are so deeply programmed to work on this planet that has an essentially 24-hour day.
A particular circadian. Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah. What happens to us when suddenly we just do not have day and night anymore?
Well, if you're aboard a ship, I assume, I mean, we're talking about far enough in the future where we have these propulsion systems, it's far enough to say that I think we would be able to simulate night-day cycles aboard the ship.
Sure.
So at least on ship, your night-day cycles to you would seem normal. They would seem to be transpiring at the same rate as they would if you were back on Earth. Now, meanwhile, someone back on Earth would be, if they were able to see what your night-day cycles would look like, they would say, wow, that's nothing like what it is on Earth. Because, again, you're traveling at near the speed of light. So it's, you know, from the two different perspectives, it's going to seem totally different. But from each individual, it's going to seem perfectly normal. That would allow you to at least maintain some sense of balance from a normal day-night cycle while you're on the ship. On another planet, totally different story. You're pretty much, you know, I mean, unless you're living inside all the time with no windows out to the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Or you're on a planet that has a day-night cycle that's so near to Earth that it doesn't really matter.
Which is possible.
Like Mars, right? Mm-hmm. Mars is really close.
Yeah, it's like 23-something-something hours
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's not... It's very similar. It's similar enough where I think it would be fairly easy to adapt to the day-night cycle. Not a whole lot to see outside on Mars, though, so... I mean, you'd be like, is it a nice day? Well,
it's red and dusty. Yeah. It's kind of dusty.
You know, it's a little less rusty today than it was yesterday. It's not true. It's all oxidized. Yeah, so I mean, that's just...
What does night even look like on Mars? I feel like all the pictures I've seen were taken during the day.
Well, at night, it's pretty dark. They don't have any street lamps out there. All right, you know, guys, I mean, this is incredibly interesting conversation, but as it turns out, I mean, it's going to be really hard, if not impossible, to manage time across both Earth and interstellar traveling spaceships that are moving at near the speed of light or really any significant speed, significant enough to get out of our solar system and perhaps into another one, just because that's the way time works. And it's pretty hard to wrap your head around. I mean, it's weird to think that the second hand on my watch would be moving, to me, the same amount as it would on Earth if I were on a really fast ship. But from an outside observer who somehow is magically able to see this, it would look like it's moving in slow motion. That seems crazy and counterintuitive to us, but that's the way time works. I actually don't wear a watch, so I don't even know why I bothered doing this show.
Yeah, me neither. Are yeah. we three non-watch wearers
oh,
right now?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, wow.
I just
All
got
right.
a lot of hair on my wrist.
So, as the great Douglas Adams once said, time is an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so. And I think that pretty much sums it up, guys. We here at Forward Thinking are really excited to have a conversation with you, our audience, and to really make this an interactive experience, not just us gathering around and chatting into microphones and being silly, but to really have conversations about the future and things that are going to play a role in our future. So we highly recommend you go check out the website. It's fwthinking.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Google+. If there's any place else you think we should be, let us know. We're going to be there. And we look forward to having a conversation with you and finding out what you think about the future and what gets you excited. Let us know. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.